Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic, We Are Possessive. He joins us weekly, the films Sinners, Warfare, and October 8th.
Sinners is a really interesting movie, and it turned out to be different from what the promotion and some of the early reviews had led me to think it was, because it really is being promoted as a horror movie, as a vampire movie. Well, it is a horror movie, basically, and it is a vampire movie, but my gosh, I would say that about two-thirds of it, maybe even more than that, have nothing to do with the vampires who do eventually show up. Most of it is really about a young man who, the movie takes place in 1932 in Mississippi, in a small town and near that small town. A young man who shows up there, and he lives there, and he is a very talented blues guitar player and singer. And he crosses the path of a couple of men who want to start up a new juke joint. They want to start up a place where people can gather and drink and eat and have a good time and listen to music and dance to music. So that all makes a great deal of sense, except that these two guys, who, by the way, are identical twins named Smoke and Stack, not very original there, but that's their names, are both played by Michael B. Jordan. They're not the nicest guys in the world. They have just come down from Chicago. They have a whole lot of money with which they're going to start their new juke joint, and the money is obviously ill-gotten. So that's a kind of a subplot in the movie. But we have very much of the film deals with this very, very nice young man. And his ambition is to be a great blues singer and to be a guitar player and to have people listen and enjoy his music. And he gets caught up with these two criminals. Now, there's a whole lot else that goes on in the movie besides this. The Smoke and Stack guys have girlfriends who they haven't seen for a long time, and they get reunited with them, and various things happen there. Also, right from the very, very beginning of the movie, the young man, who is one of our main characters, is in terrible conflict with his father, who is a preacher. In fact, the young man is known as Preacher's Son, and the father does not want him to have anything to do with the devil's music. So that's also going on in the film. And the young man now, of course, he's no longer a boy. He's grown up, and he loves the devil's music, and that's what he wants to do. But that's also another little strand that runs through the film. And then, of course, there are those vampires who eventually show up. And they're not the decorous vampires of movies from the 30s and the 40s and the 50s, where they sort of sink their fangs into your neck and drain your blood, and that's that. These are the kinds of vampires we have in more modern movies, where they kind of chew you up. So there's a whole lot of blood and gore, and you have to be ready for that if you go to see Sinners. They are very much sinners. In fact, the term sinners has quite a number of meanings in this movie. But they really, again, don't get into their real action until we're a long, long way into the movie, which, by the way, itself is well over 2 hours long. But once they arrive, then the movie devolves into more of an action film. I was much more interested in the drama part of the movie. I was much more interested in Preacher's Boy showing up and in his relationship with Smoke and Stack and in the various women in their lives. That all interested me a whole lot more than when the vampires eventually show up. Once the vampires show up, of course, there are a whole lot of action scenes and special effects scenes that just interested me less. For some people, that will be the whole point of the movie. They'll be waiting for this stuff throughout the first hour or hour and a half until it really gets cranked up. But for me, it was more interesting when the movie was sort of a pure dramatic story. There's another character I have to mention, actually a little group of characters. There's an Irishman named Remick, played by Jack O'Connell, who shows up with a couple of companions, and they play music which is very, very different from the blues played by Preacher's Boy and the people in the juke joint. They play more traditional kinds of folk music, Irish folk music. And it's lovely music. I love the blues in this movie. I love the Irish folk music in this movie. It's all wonderful. But they show up and they turn out to be not what they seem. In fact, they're so much not what they seem that when they reveal their true selves, it's not really all that much of a surprise. They just seem much, much, much too nice somehow for this movie, which is otherwise largely about criminals and all that sort of thing. But they are very, very interesting characters, and I really, really love their music. And then also, this movie taking place in the early 1930s in Mississippi, of course, there is what the vampire stuff is really a metaphor for, which is racism. And yes, the Ku Klux Klan plays a part in this movie. It's there sometimes explicitly, pretty much always in the background, if you choose to think about it. It's always there, the threat of violence, the threat of that kind of horror, that kind of very real horror. The vampire genre has been around for a very, very long time, and it seems to be undying in the movies, like vampires themselves. It's an undying genre. And one of the reasons is that it can have all these different meanings. Vampires can be a metaphor for so many things. During the 80s, for example, there were vampire movies that used vampirism as a metaphor for the AIDS crisis. Here, it's a metaphor for racism, but it's a pretty effective metaphor. So my bottom line on the movie, it's a wonderful drama. It's an okay vampire horror movie, and it's a really, really well-made film, and it has some terrific music in it. I wish it had much more music in it, but the music that there is wonderful. I recommend Sinners. By the way, directed, I don't think I mentioned this, by Ryan Coogler, who's been around for a long time. His first movie, Fruitvale Station, has been my favorite up until now. Sinners is now a close rival of that. And now, our second movie for today, Warfare. And it is a movie about, you guessed it, warfare. And this is a film which is actually co-directed by Ray Mendoza, who is a veteran of the Iraq War, and Alex Garland, who is a really, really interesting filmmaker who has made one excellent science fiction movie, Ex Machina, and another pretty good science fiction movie, Annihilation, and some other stuff in between. His previous movie, before now, just came out last year, was Civil War. So he seems to be very much immersed in war these days. And Civil War was a kind of a fable of a war movie that wanted to get us thinking about some of the basic issues of war. In some ways, it was sort of a little bit abstract in its concept, not in its action, which was very bruising. But it was a movie that wanted to get people thinking about the larger issues of war. Now, Ray Mendoza was a technical advisor on, I think, the main technical advisor on Civil War, and he now shows up as the co-director of Warfare. We don't have that many movies which are co-directed, but this one was co-directed by Ray Mendoza, an Army veteran who is a former Navy SEAL, who is a newcomer to actually making movies, and Alex Garland, who has made quite a few feature films and is a major figure in contemporary cinema. So that's what we have here, a movie that is co-directed by these two people, with Alex Garland providing the movie-making expertise and Ray Mendoza providing the technical expertise that is very important along the way. So what is interesting about Warfare is that it is very, very, very different from almost all other war movies that I've seen. It has some parallels in previous war movie productions, but it's very unusual. It takes place almost entirely in one building. And what we have here are a platoon of Navy SEALs who have been assigned to do some surveillance, some reconnaissance in Ramadi in Iraq back in 2006. And so they enter this building. There's a family there. It takes them a little bit of effort to get to the family. Once they get to the family, we discover, as viewers of the film, that no, they're not there to somehow combat this family or arrest this family or detain this family or kill this family. In fact, they just need to use the building. So they have to tell the family to stay over there in the corner and keep yourselves quiet. And the family pretty much does that. So what is the movie really about? It's about this platoon of Navy SEALs while they are doing their surveillance and staking themselves out in this building. The movie takes place not entirely, but largely in real time, which is to say, the incidents that we're seeing on the screen follow one another step by step. There's not a lot of editing. There's a huge amount of editing. There's not a lot of cutting out time by cutting the film. We are watching things step by step by step. Parts of the movie are actually dull. Here we have a war movie with tremendous tension, tremendous suspense, but parts of it are kind of dull because the soldiers are just waiting to see what's going to happen next. Are we going to get attacked? We have to get in touch with such and such another station, and we have to wait to hear from them, and that sort of thing. So yes, there are times when I think, as in real war, something which I have not experienced at firsthand, but from what I've heard about it, there is a whole lot of waiting. There's a whole lot of downtime. Now, this movie doesn't have a lot of that. It's only about an hour and a half long, but it has some of that. And that is why, as I say, parts of warfare are really very interesting, sort of dull, but most of it is not dull. Most of it, we are in suspense, just as the soldiers themselves are in suspense. What is going to happen next? When is something going to happen? At one point, they're moving out of the building, and there's a tremendous, violent surprise that takes place. It's a real turning point in the film. So yes, the movie does spring things on us. It has jump scares. It has loud noises that make you want to leap out of your seat every now and then, interspersed with those moments of just step-by-step procedure. You do this, and then you do this, and then you do this, and then you wait, and then you do this, and then you do this. Sounds kind of dull as I say it, but that's one of the most interesting things about the movie. So that's what warfare is like to watch. There's also quite a lot of video footage, which is to say we're watching shots that are taken from other surveillance outposts, and we see this grainy footage on the screen taken from a helicopter or someplace or other, and we see figures moving about in the streets, and we have the comments on this that we hear over the radio by our Navy SEALs and other soldiers that are in the area communicating with each other. There's quite a lot of that in the movie as well, and that provides a certain amount of visual variety to the film. But mostly we are watching our platoon of Navy SEALs and what happens to them. Now, the second part of the movie, I'm not sure exactly when it begins, maybe roughly halfway through, is after that really violent turning point in the movie. And then we have now injured Navy SEALs. And it takes us a while to find out how injured they are and how many are injured and just what the outcome of that attack are, because it takes them a while. Some of them are so messed up mentally by what happened that they have trouble now figuring out what happened to their comrades there in the house and what happened to them themselves. So that takes a little while to sort out. And then we do have a couple of horrible, horrible injuries. And now we have that part of the movie. We have the calling for help. We have the delay before help arrives. We have the moments of looking for the morphine, trying to find the morphine. What are we going to do? And while we're doing that part of the movie and we're waiting for that to be resolved, we have screams and moans and howls. So that's another whole part of the movie. Now, I'm probably making warfare sound like a pretty unpleasant viewing experience. And by many standards, it is exactly that. And that is, I think, what makes it a really, really important movie. Or at least a very valuable movie, because it shows the real horrors of war without the guts and glory stuff that a Steven Spielberg, for example, would be sure to surround this with. I thought of Saving Private Ryan at times when I watched the film. The opening sequence of Saving Private Ryan, the D-Day invasion, is legendary, and rightly so. It's a brilliantly realistic restaging of an important military action. This movie does the same thing even better, and without all of the glamour that then follows for a couple of hours. This is a movie which shows war in all of its horror, all of its evil. The title is very well justified, Warfare. In a way, it's making war on the audience by daring us to actually face up to the things that actually happen in war. But I found it just really quite a fascinating film to watch, even with the dull stretches along the way. I really recommend it. I hope people see it. Finally, I'd like to turn to another kind of war in a documentary called October 8, directed by Wendy Sachs. This is a documentary, and October 8 refers to the day after the horrific attack by Hamas on Israel on October 7th last year. So that is what October 8th is about. It's about all the things that happened after that invasion, that attack by Hamas on Israel. I don't like October 8, the documentary. In fact, I think it's a pretty terrible movie, and I really, really want to come out against it. It's about a hugely important topic. And yes, it deals with something really, really, really real and something really, really, really unfortunate and, to my mind, horrific, which is the rise in anti-Semitism since the attack by Hamas. the rise of anti-Semitism on the streets, in the social media, and so forth and so on, in the universities, very famously so. The trouble with the documentary October 8 is that it is wildly unbalanced. It is all about the anti-Semitism. It is all about the attack of Hamas on Israel. And it barely even mentions Israel's war on Hamas that's been going on ever since. It barely even mentions it. Near the end of the film, we have a tiny little bit about it. I would say less than a minute. Aside from that, it deals with the anti-Semitism. It deals with the attack of Hamas on Israel. Hugely important. I totally agree, and troubling, and something we all should think about much more than we probably do. But this is one of the most unbalanced documentaries I have seen in a very, very long time. If you watch it at all, watch it with great caution and think not only about the things that are in the movie, but about all the things that are left out of the movie. October 8, not a movie I can recommend. And that is my somewhat positive, somewhat negative story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films Sinners, Warfare, and October 8.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.